On October 28th, in a runoff presidential election, voters in Brazil elected Jair Bolsonaro, an extreme right-wing congressman who has praised the country's 20-year military dictatorship, spoken approvingly of torture, and has threatened his political opponents with jail or exile. While the election result had been expected at least since the first election round earlier in the month, it was nonetheless a real shock for many people both inside and outside of Brazil, who had been stunned by the rapid spread of far right-wing populism worldwide, and Bolsonaro is perhaps an extreme embodiment of this trend. His victory follows several years of political crisis in Brazil after a decade in which the left-wing Workers' Party, or PT, governed the country of over 200 million people, beginning with the election of unionist and former metal worker Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva, better known as Lula, who governed from 2003 to 2011 and presided over a significant expansion in social spending and a reduction in economic inequality. Lula was followed in the presidency by fellow PT politician Dilma Rousseff, who governed from 2011 until she was impeached by Brazil's Congress in 2016 for alleged corruption, after which the unpopular right-wing politician Michel Temer assumed power. To help us make sense of what's going on in Brazil, my guest is Dr. Flavia Braga Vieira, a professor of sociology at the Federal Rural University of Rio de Janeiro in Brazil. She is also the author of a book whose title translates into English as From Workers United to the Globalization of Hope. Welcome, Flavia Braga Vieira.
Hi, Dan. Nice to talk to you.
Let's talk about who is Bolsonaro. Where does he come from? What's his history in Congress? And what interests does he represent, or what coalition of interests does he represent?
Bolsonaro is a retired military man who was elected for the first time in 1998 as a municipal councillor, and since 1991 has been a federal deputy for 7 terms. He, since as a parliamentary, has always been ultra-conservative. Especially, he has a great critic of any attempt to elucidate the crimes of the Brazilian military dictatorship. He protects and defends the military agents who were responsible for governing the country from 1964 to 1989 through torture, repression, death. So he's very a defender of the worst forces of our society. But since he had always been a deputy of little national expression, no one imagined that one day he would reach the presidency of the republic. He never approved any single law or project in the National Congress during the 27 years that he was a deputy. The interests and coalitions that he represents are very complex. The coalition that supports him is very complex. It involves some factors of the armed forces, some ultra-conservative parties, deputies and leaders of neo-Pentecostal groups, agribusiness, financial market sectors, and arms industry, among others. I think it's very complex.
What about Brazil's business elites, its corporate elites, and even international capital? I know that during the campaign, The Economist, other business press were accused of normalizing Bolsonaro, softening up or not reporting on his authoritarian tendencies. I know there were a lot of candidates on the center-right and the right who were running. Why did these interests, do you think, eventually settle on Bolsonaro as a candidate? Or why did they decide they could live with him? Why were they so determined to see the Workers' Party, the PT, defeated?
I believe that a good part of the Brazilian elite did not want Bolsonaro as a president. They had other candidates in the first round. But as he was the right-wing candidate, the only who managed to reach the second round of elections, today the entire Brazilian elite supports him. But we have here in Brazil a highly concentrated media sector that was supporter of Bolsonaro since the first moment. And internationally, I think that media were not approving his candidate. But I think that some major capitalist sectors were not really worried about Bolsonaro. I think it's more like media and progressive forces and center-wing forces. But the capitalist sectors, in fact, supported Bolsonaro or were not afraid of Bolsonaro. And the major support politically he has internationally is Donald Trump. The question is exactly the one that you made. Why were they so determined to see PT defeated? I think the Brazilian elite, since the middle of PT government, since around 2008, have turned against the government of Lula and Dilma Rousseff. In the beginning, they were more, some sectors were together with the PT government, but then they changed it. They did everything they could to get out PT of the government. So in the presidential elections, they had to support the only candidate who had chances against PT. The other candidates of the right wing did not get even 10% of the votes in the first round. So they were very weak. So Bolsonaro was the only option. So our Brazilian elites, they are so retrograde. You know, remember that we were the last country in the world to abolish slavery in the end of the 19th century. Then we have two long dictatorships for more than 20 years during the 20th century. So this elite, so retrograde, they simply did not accept the government of the Workers' Party. Bolsonaro was their last attempt in this fight against PT, in my opinion.
It's sort of ironic in a way. I know that people on the left were very critical of the PT governments of Lula and Dilma for making substantial compromises and working with Brazilian capital, perhaps against the popular interests or not going as far to the left as they would have liked.
Yeah, that's really strange thing, because during the first three mandates, first and second of Lula and then the first of Dilma, in fact, they compromised a lot of great and major sectors of our elites and cooperative groups. But as they lost support of some of these groups, in fact, in the fourth mandate, the second mandate of Dilma, it started to move against some of these forces. And this was the final battle. After this, the elites really decided to get them out of government, to get Dilma through the impeachment process out of government, and get also PT out of our political scene, because they needed to put many of PT leaderships in jail with the justification of corruption, because they really needed PT out of the political game in Brazil. I think that Lula and Dilma made good governments for the elites of Brazil. Good government in a way that our economy improved growth. I think that they made the political and economic situation in Brazil much more solid than we have in the past. So they were really good for business, for the needs of the elites. But on the other hand, they really did a lot for the poorest, which means that they put in process many projects that empowered the poor. So I think that this was not acceptable for this so rude and authoritarian elite that we have.
We've heard in the media many analogies being made between Bolsonaro and Trump, media calling him the Trump of the tropics. How appropriate or how useful do you feel like that analogy is? How far does it get us? And how would you label Bolsonaro? Is he a neo-fascist? Is he an extreme right-wing populist? Talk about those parallels.
I think that Trump and Bolsonaro have a lot in common. They present themselves as coming from out of politics. They claim for a liberal economic project. They have very strong discourse against the left and the popular sectors, especially minorities. Both use the so-called social media to talk with the people, and in a way they delegitimize the institutional politics and channels of the institutional politics. But I think that there are a few differences that are important. Bolsonaro is a military man from origin, not an entrepreneur or, you know, a businessman. The ideas of Bolsonaro, in my view, are less clear than the Trump's ideas. So I don't think that Trump's project for the United States is so undefined as the Brazilian project of Bolsonaro. I think that this is very different in my view. I think that neo-fascist is a very good definition for Bolsonaro. The direct connection with popular masses, the use of violent discourse against minorities, xenophobic nationalism, these are characteristics of a neo-fascist, in my opinion. I think that is a good label to define Bolsonaro, exactly.
Who was Bolsonaro's base? Among which social groups did he have most of his support? Are we talking about, in terms of class, in terms of an urban-rural divide, in terms of gender? I know there's a growing evangelical church movement in Brazil, but where is the sort of Bolsonaro's base primarily located?
Well, he has very great support among middle-class sectors, middle-class of the big cities, of the larger cities of the country, and also has support from the poor in the south and southeast of Brazil, which are the regions more urbanized and industrial of the country. So a middle class all around the country, especially in big cities, and low classes in the south and southeast of the country. Bolsonaro did not win only among the poor of north and northeast of the country. Exactly the regions and groups that received most of the distributed programs of PT. And these groups are people from the countryside and the peripheries of the more poor cities of the country. So I think that excluding this very poor group that really started to have a very more or less better life during PT government, all the rest of the country supported him. But I think that conservative groups among the elites and among the poor were crucial for his victory. I think that the neo-Pentecostal churches, called so-called evangelics in Brazil, they play a very important role.
My guest is Flavia Braga Vieira. She's a professor of sociology in Brazil at the Federal Rural University, and we're talking about the election of Jair Bolsonaro as Brazilian president and the aftermath of the election and what the implications of the election are for progressive movements both in Brazil and elsewhere. Let's talk a little bit more about the appeals to violence and the role of state violence. Brazil, as you mentioned, is a country that had a 21-year-long military dictatorship from the 1960s to the 1980s. What is the social memory of the dictatorship in the present moment? How did that play into the election, and how did he use his appeals to the military and the history of the dictatorship in the campaign?
This is very annoying because, you know, we know that everything that happened during the dictatorship, we know that there were torture, there were assassinates of left-wing groups and people. But what happened is that Brazil is a very big country, very big population, and most of this violence against militant activists during dictatorship was not very clear during the dictatorship. It's different from Chile or Argentina, where there were so many murders, were so many people that disappeared. Almost everybody knew at that moment that something was going on. In Brazil, it was not like this. And it was very concentrated in some regions of the country, big cities, where the militants were more active at that moment. And so all the repression, all the violence against society that the state, the military state, did at that moment were not really open. And we did not have, since the end of dictatorship, any good and deep process of memory, of opening these archives and opening the information. It was very weak in Brazil comparing to other countries in South America. And Bolsonaro is using these ideas, the idea that torture is not a really big point or problem, because in fact some people deserve it. And the people in general, they really don't care about, because they think that they are not going to be tortured, or dictatorship just tortured some marginals and people that were doing bad things or robbing banks and this kind of thing. And I think that Bolsonaro uses this very good.
Yeah, Brazil is known widely for having some of the most vibrant and the largest mass popular social movements in the world. Some of the best known of them are the MST, the Landless Workers Movement, others like the MAB, the Movement of People Affected by Large Dams, the Homeless Workers Movement, a huge labor movement. What do you see as the implications of this election for the large mass popular movements going forward?
I think that they keep doing the kind of actions they are doing for the last 20 years. But I think that the government will try to criminalize these actions. I think they will try to put some leadership of this mass movement in jail. They have this tool to put some PT, some Workers' Party in jail, using the corruption explanation and justification. And I think they will use against the social movement, the big social movements in Brazil, they use another justification, which is the justification of the social order and against the violence. But I think that these groups are so solid that even if some of their leaderships are put in jail, they will resist. I think the groups will resist because these are very strong and solid movements organized all around the country, not only in one region, but they are in all states of the country, and I think they will keep doing the activism they are used to do. But on the other hand, we'll also have a reorganization, I think, a reorganization of the left. Because in the last years, as we have a left-wing government, some of the support of the group came from the states, and now this group will need to find support on the society, on the mass, on the population general.
Before we close, Flavia Braga Vieira, I want to just put the situation in Brazil in the context, the broader context of Latin American politics and Latin America's left movement. You know, a decade ago, I think you could say Latin America's pink tide, so-called pink tide, was at its sort of highest point. Left governments were in power across most of South America, part of Central America, ranging from radical left to sort of center left. And, you know, the defeat of the PT is just one of sort of many losses for left governments across the Americas, and the rise of the right in Latin America. How do you see the state of the Latin American left more broadly at this moment? And what do you see as the potential for its renewal?
Well, I think that what's going to happen in the next years will be crucial. It depends on what's going to happen for Trump in Argentina. I've been there recently, and I have a lot of friends in Argentina from the university, and there are very mass demonstrations in the streets every day in Buenos Aires and other big cities in Argentina. So I think that Macri government, for example, will not be approved for a second mandate. I think that this resistance in Argentina can lead to a different government. I don't know which forces, but I think that will change more left than they have now, for example. I think that the Bolsonaro government can be a very bad government. So maybe we'll have in one or year or 1 year and a half a political and administrative crisis in Brazil. So maybe this can open a window for other left opportunities in the continent. And also we still have some progressive governments in other countries like Ecuador and Bolivia. I think these are still, I think that the left is still in the game in most of the countries of South America. I think that the more critical situation is Venezuela. I don't think that that government will end well. And I think that the pressure of the U.S., the U.S. government, and pressure of other big, important economies and countries in the world will lead to a situation that will be a lot of violence and a bad end on what's happening in Venezuela. But I guess that Brazil and Argentina are more important to make the situation more stable than Venezuela, for example. The possibilities for the left will still be open in the continent. I'm an optimist in this way.
Finally, to wrap up, given the election results in Brazil, what would international solidarity with Brazil, and especially solidarity with Brazil's social movements, with Brazil's popular sectors, with the poor of Brazil, look like at this moment in time, in your opinion?
I think that would be very important. I think that international solidarity with militants and activists in Brazil will be crucial for the security of these people. For example, I think that we need to denounce any judicial process against activists of social movements. We need to protect professors and teachers, this kind of thing, especially because I think that these groups, social movements and intellectuals, will be important to rebuild the possibilities of a social protection state in the long term in the continent, in Brazil and in the continent. So I think that will be very important to denounce, to make some actions of protests in other parts of the world. And I think that also in some point it will be important that organisms internationally present their opinion about what's going on in Brazil. So this is important. This is important to have some institutions, liberal institutions, state, intergovernmental organizations, following what's going on in Brazil and presenting opinion about this. This will probably make some pressure against authoritarian possible actions of this government of Bolsonaro to defend activists and to protect the democracy. I think that most of the groups, organized groups in Brazil, are expecting this international solidarity.
I've been speaking with Flavia Braga Vieira, a professor of sociology at the Federal Rural University in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. We've been talking about the results of the Brazilian elections, the implications for Brazilian society, and what we can expect in the future. Thank you so much, Flavia, for joining us.
Tais com palmos medida é a conta menor que tiraste em vida, é a conta menor que tiraste em vida, é de bom tamanho, nem largo nem fundo, é a parte que te cabe nesse latifúndio, é a parte que te cabe nesse latifúndio, não é cova grande.